Hello, racing fans. Edison Hatter back with another episode of First Over with Edison Hatter. It's the week after the North America Cup. It is Saturday, June 25th, 2022. It's a Saturday evening, and happy to welcome back one of my panelists from last week, Ray Catolo, to discuss recapping North America Cup, a lot of other loose ends in the industry we'll discuss as well, and, of course, the Saturday evening with my Mohawk card. Ray, welcome as always.
Oh, God, we have to do all of North America? And we only have like 40 minutes to do this. There's like South Dakota we have to talk about and 50 whole states. There's some territories that are technically involved. I don't think we're gonna have enough time to do all of it. I do have to say though, if we don't get to all of North America, I always enjoy when you start the show and you say, "I am Edison Hatter," because I don't want anyone at home to be confused and think I'm Edison Hatter at any point. I know sometimes it's tough to tell between the two of us who is Edison Hatter and who is not Edison Hatter, because at the end of the day, we all want to be Edison Hatter.
Well, Ray, we will jump into last week's recap, and we got a lot to discuss. I guess we can incorporate the top 10 poll in here as well, because we saw the current number one rated horse, Jimmy Freight, win last week in that free-for-all. Line Drive checked in second. Alley Wag was third. That was a pretty good edition of the free-for-all pace there and the Mohawk Gold Cup Invitational, more correctly.
It was also it was a stark difference from when Freight won it in 2019 by just going to the front, and then he kind of scooted away from admittedly not the strongest field for that race. The big power horse then was McWicked, and he was already at the twilight of his career. But this time around, anyone who was watching the race, you know, with an understanding of trip, was probably watching the final turn and thinking Line Drive Hanover was going to win. And the fact that he didn't just emphasized the performance Jimmy Freight put in even more so than, you know, the fact that he was first over and pressing that pace against Alley Wag Hanover. But yeah, it was one of the many races that night that I did not make any money on. But I'm glad for all the people who cashed the $50,000 check and went home with the trophy, because I went home. Well, I was thankfully at home, because if I had to go home, I probably wouldn't have had enough to get on the bus. It was a rough day.
Well, at least the positive I can always count on from Ray babbling along is that I can probably find time to find the poll here. So there we go. There's the poll. So Jimmy Freight is number one. In fact, I think just about every winner I think we're going to discuss here somehow found their way onto this week's top 10 poll.
As they should. You should not mention a specific horse on this poll for my sake and for everyone's sake.
Hanover. Line Drive Hanover finishes second in this free-for-all, ends up picking up the ninth place spot on the top 10 poll, was seventh last week, drops a couple of spots, but a pretty good effort there in second. As we continue on with the Mohawk results, in race 7, we had Fast as the Wind win the Good Times Final as the 2-5 favorite over Twinbee, Archie, and Pretender. And Fast as the Wind checks in at number 10, entering the poll for the first time this week in number 10.
It's tough to evaluate a horse like him because it's so early in the season with that Glamour Boy trotting division that you don't really know if the effort that he put in there really establishes him as one of the top horses in the region being, you know, the West, as opposed to like in Europe and stuff like that where everyone else lives. We live here, in case you ever get confused. But nonetheless, he won that race in the decisive manner that he was supposed to. The only thing is, of course, he's still green, kind of wobbly in the turns. The one thing that's a bit more noticeable this time around, though, is that he does not have to sit so close. Like at first, towards the end of his two-year-old season, it seemed like he might have been just kind of an opportunistic type where, given the right circumstances, he could get up and win if he's sitting in the pocket and stuff. But he's being put into spots that require a bit more versatility and maturity and delivering on that. So maybe that earns him a spot on the 10th spot. Like I said, that division is still too fresh for me to really gauge how any of them are. And on top of that, we're still about a few weeks away before some of the better ones really start hitting their best strides.
So as we move on to race 8 last weekend, it was the Fan Hanover Final, one that I think we all thought maybe may have been one of the more open races. Had a battle between Treacherous Dragon. Seasilk ended up taking some really heavy money off of that morning line, although quite a few of us were talking about her. Prohibition Legal, your third choice. Those were kind of the three logicals, but it was the favorite, Treacherous Dragon, getting it done, and she moves into number six as she enters the poll and quickly catapults up to number six on the poll.
Yeah, that's Seasilk. That's one of those interesting case studies where you have to wonder if the betting influenced the result of the race, more in the sense of the horse was taking clear money. So sometimes when drivers see that they are taking a decent amount of change, they will be a bit more aggressive with their charge. So I'm curious if that at all impacted Page's decision to go for the front instead of sit off the pace like he always had with a lot of Burke horses that he aligns with in these types of situations. Because we might have seen a much different race from Seasilk had she tried to race from off the speed versus going towards the front. It's really tough to say, and it's one of the many things that make handicapping this sport very confusing sometimes. Nonetheless, though, we got a glimpse at what Prohibition Legal could actually do if put into the race and not having to overcome traffic. And yeah, she's still not as good as those Brett Pelling horses. Brett Pelling, he left here for his homeland and then came back and he was furious. This is a renaissance if I've ever seen one for a horseman who has ever left and come back and tried to get back to the top of the sport. Because these young Brett Pelling horses, really, they have a way of just racing lights out compared to some of these other ones, even though Brett doesn't have them anymore. Congrats, Nancy. They the top two in the Fan Hanover are now being trained by Nancy Tactor. Whatever reason that is, I don't know. It was an interesting move, I thought, though.
Race 9, we had a battle between Atlanta and Bella Bellini. Atlanta. Atlanta number 8 on the poll. Bella Bellini received 11 votes in this week's poll, and it did not involve one from me this week for the first time all season. It is Atlanta, number 8.
I don't know how.
Atlanta received one first place vote as well.
Yeah, I don't know how you watch that race in the Armborough Flight and then say, that's it, Atlanta is the best horse in North America. She sat a pocket trip and pulled out and was extended to an extent, no pun intended there, and only won by about like a neck or a half length over when Dove's Cry came flying up down the outside. I said this to you right after the race, and you agreed with me. I'm saying that right now so you can't deny it. I have the receipts. I said in our little text, and I quote, Bella Bellini went one hell of a trip. And then you said something along the lines of, yeah, I can't disagree with you there. And she still finished fourth by only two lengths. That was an impossible spot for her to come from. I think she's a much better horse than Atlanta right now, but Atlanta won the race. And sometimes the best horse doesn't win the race. And what happens when the best horse doesn't win the race? Sometimes I win money, sometimes I lose money. This case, Ed, do you write loans? I might, cause I gotta get some gas money this week. And, I want to be able to make it places.
Wait, I disagree with that. I think Atlanta got a much cleaner trip than Bella Bellini did.
No, without a doubt she did. Sorry,
Bella Bellini got a better trip than Atlanta did. Atlanta wins anyway.
BS, get lost. You're wrong. Don't make me have to freaking reply to this podcast with a screenshot of what you said and me potentially using a curse word. I don't want to put a curse word I use on the internet, let alone show that you would do something like lie.
Atlanta got a really difficult pocket trip. Bella Bellini got perfect. She got away 8th. She was in the outer flow early. She moved 3 wide past.
Flow is a delicate, is a generous word. A genuous? She was caught behind a horse that could not go forward. And the moment the horse got forward enough, she gave up, went to the pylons and just hoped for the best. And then she had to do it uncovered. She was gaining ground there as the tempo was picking up coming into the straight. That was a massive race from her in my book. And honestly, I think she's just going to keep getting better. The way she won the Oaks as a 3-year-old, if she can keep progressing and developing from that form, she's bound to be one of the top mares of the last couple of years. I'm willing to say that.
So in race 10, it was Test of Faith, last year's horse of the year. She did it very impressively at 1-2. It was Test of Faith, came from 6th early on, got the win by a length, came home with 26-2, and she catapults all the way to number 2 on this week's poll, and picks up 4 first place votes as well.
Yeah, another Brett Pelling masterpiece in my book. And also, that race played out the same way that I was talking about on the panel. The makeup of that race depended on what Dave wanted to do. And Dave wanted to sit off the speed because she's admittedly much better off the speed than on the front. And also made sure that she was in front of Lion Sentinel. So Lion Sentinel got a picture-perfect trip and then just did not fire as a result. Whatever reason, my guess is there's probably you probably put a little pipe down her throat and then you just see this little mucus cavern inside of her lungs. Then probably you shake it around. There might be a little bit of squishy. You know how mucus is. It builds up. It's disgusting. But it happens because... you know, Lion Sentinel's not from the area, and we see that a lot of times with horses that ship to areas where they don't race, you know, often, that they get a little sick, and then they don't race to their best form. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe something else happened. I don't know, but Test of Faith is always, in my book, I feel like she's going to be the better horse than Lion Sentinel in the long run. That age pacing, the pacing age mares division last year was... It was a contentious bunch, but in terms of strength, I don't think it's been anywhere near as strong as it's going to be this year with this class of 3-year-olds coming in. So it'll be interesting to see when Lion Sentinel bounces back, because I'm sure she will, how that pairs with some of these other 4-year-olds as they get better, especially Test of Faith.
Race 11, North America Cup, Pebble Beach, 1-2, parked beyond the half, by the way, at 55 flat half. And rocks home in 55 flat on the back half as well. Wins it by 2¾ at 55 cents on the dollar. It is Pebble Beach winning and claiming spot number 3 on the top 10 poll. And Ray, we should have had a coffee bet on it. You liked Ario Hanover. I like Nighthawk. I at least beat you there, 5th versus 8th. But it was Beach Glass and Frozen Hanover checking in 2nd and 3rd behind Pebble Beach.
You know, we were talking about who went the tough trip. I think Pebble Beach went the toughest trip all night. How do you survive going parked to a 55 half to win in 150 in a $1 million race by open? How could that pot? You're 55 cents on the dollar and you destroy the field. How do you do that? Ed, how does a horse leave the gate? How do they go that fast and be better? Ed, he's 55 cents on the dollar. How does he do that? Like, that it played out the way that everyone thought it would. It was... Pebble Beach was much more developed than everybody else. I saw Ario Hanover was washed out the moment he was behind the gate, and I knew I was done. That horse was under way too much stress for 65 degree heat, or I guess 15 centigrade, whatever it was that night. You know the math. You can do the conversion for me. But aside from that, it played out as textbook as possible. Elimination winners go 1 and 2, and then you had an interesting long shot that snuck into the final and Frozen Hanover get 3rd, and you had a hometown horse in Ron who just sat off of everybody who was way too excited to get 4th. It's another instance of you have to wonder if any of these horses staying up in Canada, like a lot of the shippers really didn't perform too well in that race, and a lot of the local horses did much better. So you have to look at that and think, you know, did some horses scope sick? Did some horses, like, you just never know what's going to happen in these kinds of races, even if they have a start over the track. You put horses into foreign environments and you can get a horse that goes 49 one week and then they go 54 the next. And the temperature had dropped too so much. These are all things that they don't teach you at handicapping school to think about. But then when you handicap the masterpiece horse on paper and then they finish 8th by 10 lengths, the only thing you know how to do is hurl a chair instead of, you know, ask the trainer, hey, what happened? Oh, you know, the horse couldn't really breathe. So have you ever tried running when you can't breathe? I've tried that many times myself just to find some sort of empathy. And it's hard. It is hard. It's hard. That's why you don't see people with asthma win the Olympics.
So I think it was you I was talking to about this, Ray. So, you know, Frozen Hanover, Ron, yeah, they're big long shots, but, you know, they might not have been impossible to have. No. Pebble Beach, Beach Glass, 2 logicals, $2,150 on a dollar super?
For the dollar, yeah, like, it doesn't make any sense. You knew Frozen Hanover was going to get put into the race, and Ron, I said this to my dad, too, the week of, that I looked at Ron and I just had like one of those premonitions that you sometimes have looking at a form where you go, this is a horse that And you can write this off as red boarding. I really don't care. But I genuinely felt that Ron was one of those horses where it's like, you know, at 70-1, these races sometimes play out really stupidly. You never know who's going to finish fourth. He seems like one of those ones that could get a decent check in the race. And sure enough, he did. Even if he didn't, I would have probably still said the same thing. But the thing though, all that said, is even if it wasn't wrong, even if it was just like another 70 or 60 to one shot, when you have the two favorites go 1-2 and then a medium long shot and a bit of a longer shot get third and fourth, that super for a buck should not pay 2,100. That was, I think, one of the best payoffs I've seen in the last few months, if not few years. That was ridiculous.
Well, for those following along at home, I guess we'll finish out this top 10 poll. There were three other horses we haven't mentioned yet on the top 10, and in fact, one of them we will discuss a little bit later. But Fast as the Wind was 10, Line Drive Hanover was 9, Atlanta 8, Fun at the Beach stays at number 7 off of the impressive score in the Battle of Lake Erie, as well as a Borgata Series final win, over $500,000 already in earnings this year. In fact, I think Fun at the Beach is number 1 in earnings so far this year. Is that accurate?
Yes. Maybe not. With Pebble Beach winning the cup, he might now be second.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm looking now. It says 441 for Pebble Beach and 512 for Fun at the Beach. But what was the North American Cup worth?
It's worth $1 million. But then when you put in the exchange rate, it's worth about $797,859.
Exchange rate. There's my answer. Thank you very much. So it is Fun at the Beach then. I'm sure Ken Weingartner's numbers were right, so that explains it. So it is Fun at the Beach then. We believe number 1 in earnings so far this year. Treacherous Dragon 6. Joviality S number 5, one that we'll give a little talk to here in a minute. Number 4, dropping from number 2, still
nope,
number 2
nope,
on my poll.
Nope.
Victory DDK.
He's raced one time! He's raced one time. He went 49 when it was 90 degrees. And does everybody forget how these horses work? I'm
a world record mile in the Cutler.
Oh, my God. It's not indicative of anything. And he's fourth.
Pebble Beach is number 3. Test of Faith, number 2. And Jimmy Freight, number 1. So that is week 3 of the Hamiltonian Society Breeders' Crown Poll. So, with that, we will turn our attention next to some work you and I have done this month here, Ray, with our good friend James Witherite, part of the First Mile broadcast on the baby races. We're done with Magic Lakers. We'll have one more race at Gateway Farms. So, first things first, this Monday, 11 races, 10 a.m. at Gateway Farm, 412 Communications on YouTube to watch the live stream. Ray, you've done quite a bit of good camera work for the broadcast. How have you enjoyed working with the babies this month?
It's been interesting. For people who are familiar with me, I'm usually a person who's in front of the camera, so it's been rewarding to work more behind the scenes and help James kind of make this thing closer to his vision and to the potential that he feels it can be. On top, it's not just me, you know, it's a bunch of all of our other friends like Luke Van Belkum, Rod Allums. I know he would chime in. I don't want to forget names, but point being, the only downside is I have to spend like $100 a week to fill my gas tank to get over there. But aside from that, at the very least, it's been fun to be out there in the 90 degree heat and come home and have the doctor come over with his little wet rag and his magic stick to say to my mom, your son has a mild case of heat stroke. And then I'm just sitting there with the thermometer in my mouth, and because of the heat stroke, it explodes and the mercury splatters all over the place. So thankfully I've had good people with me, not only to deal with the heat stroke, but also even on set you've been there. Joe Sindoni has also been a wonderful little comrade to get to know better. I got to meet him at Harris Philly a bit ago, and he's still one of the camera people over there. But all in all, it's been fun to try and make that presentation stronger and stronger with every week. And it just kind of stinks that towards the end of the run, I feel like it's getting to its peak form of presentation. But at the very least, that means it's going to be a good broadcast on Monday, and hopefully no one's lost interest in these babies just yet, because, you know, they're going to hit the track. And these are all races where you get to eyeball how they travel the turns, how they pick up their speed. And that's, you know, you can read the numbers on the lines, but what you see with your eyes sometimes tells you a bit more, and you can find some decent priced horses in that way. The same way that I tried to talk you off that 1-2-year-old in the was it the Reynolds or no, it was the Tompkins Gears. How you were so adamant on this 1-3-5 Burke horse. I was trying to say to you, Ed, that this other horse that we saw race in front of us was coming off of some decent baby races, and sure enough, Ed, my horse beat your horse. So that nulls the coffee bet on the North America Cup, and in fact, you owe me $10,000 by the end of this show. I will be, my front door is unlocked. You can come in at any time, and if you don't drop off the check, I'll be seeing you Friday, and you're gonna pay.
All right, Mike Verbosi, I know you're listening to this, so I know you're going to text me right now and say that was Ray being too verbose, and what's the H-E-double-L was that conversation of Ray. So I don't know either, but whatever. Words were said, whatever Ray just said. Hey, you're talking about babies. So we've got babies this Saturday at the Meadowlands. We got babies everywhere always, but I have to mention once again, we're going to get the second chance to see on the track my personal favorite 2-year-old. We will get to see in the, I believe, fifth race. On Saturday morning, Unicorn Blue Chip, Chapter 7 Philly, half-sibling to Plunge Blue Chip, and she is in for trainer driver Lucas Wallen. Definitely looked good last time out, Ray, before making that break in the stretch. Something caught her eye in the infield, but she was on top by quite a few lengths there.
Yeah, I haven't been this excited for something that cost $400,000 since when we had to drag this old, like, hardwood recliner out of the U-Haul truck from my grandma's. And you were just sitting, you were standing there wondering, are they going to drop it? Are they going to drop it? Because once they drop it, it's no longer worth $400,000. But this is with a horse. And, you know, at the same time, it's just baby races. Like, the horse got spooked by a whip. I don't know what that means when the horse hits the track again. I wait for them to show me what they got. Hopefully for the people who spent $400,000 on the horse, their money wouldn't have been better spent going into my pocket. That's all I can say.
Well, Ray, you said in there somewhere in that rambling rant that you prefer being in front of the camera. So, hey, rumor has it we will get to see you in front of a camera tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, yes. I have to remember tomorrow night is Friday. And today is Thursday when we're recording this for Saturday at Mohawk. Not to confuse anybody, that's for clarity's sake. I'm going to be at Yonkers Raceway tomorrow night with the fabulous and one-of-a-kind Jay Bergman to help present the eliminations for the Yonkers Trot and the Messenger Pace. We got two eliminations for each. 11 races on tap starting at 6:55 Eastern Daylight Time. That's for all the Arizonans out there. Or not all of the Arizonans, like it's about... Maybe like 3/4 of Arizona. Did you know this, Ed? Like 3/4 of Arizona doesn't follow the daylight savings time system.
I do. I spent many trips to Arizona.
God, aren't they so smart? Aren't they so smart to do that? What a stupid daylight system this is. There's not even any daylight today. There's only clouds. It's freaking useless. But what's not freaking useless is me on camera. My pretty little face is going to have a whole bunch of handicapping thoughts and hopefully... help point people into some interesting directions for possible profits on that 11 race card at Yonkers. And then afterwards, I will get ready to go to the baby races on Saturday morning at the Meadowlands.
So tomorrow, well, first of all, since everyone loves your impression so much, Ray, do we get a you and Jay Bergman conversation impression here?
That's a great question because most of the I've only ever had private conversations with Jay Bergman. We've never done anything on air with each other, so you know how I sound. I gotta remember how Jay Bergman. I was just talking to him yesterday, and he's one of those people who, you know, he haunts me in my sleep. So I have to. You'd think I would remember what his voice sounds like. I can't get it. It's not as natural as Derek Givner's kind of old schoolboy Brooklyn voice. Jay's is more deep Queens than anything else, and my origins are in Brooklyn, so I'll have a better one for after I'm on air with him for 4 hours. You might even hear it come out. Who knows what'll happen. One thing's for sure, I know at least I'll have one winner. That's my guarantee.
Well, we have four big ones tomorrow night to look at. The Messenger eliminations as well as the Yonkers Strat eliminations. And, hey, you know what, Ray? I'll put myself on the spot because you and I were discussing this, as you're well aware, yesterday. So technically the first legs of the Triple Crown for harness racing. So, oh boy, let's see if I can still do it here. Oh boy, I shouldn't have given this to myself as a test. For the Pacers, it starts with the Messenger. Then it is followed by the Cane Pace. Mm-hmm. On Hambo Day at the Meadowlands, followed by the Little Brown Jug, third Thursday in September in Delaware, Ohio. And for the Trotters, it is the Yonkers Trot, followed by, is the Hamiltonian second?
You sure that's how you want to phrase the answer?
Hamiltonian is second, and I forget what's third, if I'm being honest.
Oh my, the Kentucky Futurity is third. God bless Ed Hatter, host of the Hardest Racing Podcast. Knowing the harness racing Triple Crowns.
Dirty in Kentucky in October. There we go. In Lexington at the Red Mile. Okay.
Very, very good. Wow. That brain of yours, how does it hold so much? Does it ever weigh you down sometimes? Is that why when you sleep, it's the only time your neck doesn't hurt because all of the heft of your brain isn't arching your neck? Is that the case?
Look, there are fellow insiders that will probably crucify me on social media, and I will accept that for not knowing that. But I can promise you, Ray, I'm willing to go on a limb and say there have got to be some casual racing fans out there that just heard me say that. I'm like, wait, what? There's a Triple Crown in harness racing? So I'm just saying.
That's true. There's some people who are even, you know, saying, oh, wait, Yonkers is racing? Yeah, they are racing on Friday. And I'm going to be
there. So the Messenger Stakes, the eliminations for the Pacers races 7 and 9. So our favorites here will be Hammer and Hank in the second elimination. In the first, it will be Gulf Shores. It's fields of 6. We'll get it down to 8. And I don't know. You got any thoughts for me, Ray? Admittedly, I didn't look at these fields that closely. So I defer to you since you hopefully know what you're talking about since you'll have to tomorrow night.
The one thing that's kind of unfortunate is that these races get overlooked on the calendar. They go for $500,000. And it seems like a bunch of people now are kind of... They're turned off by the fact that it's on the half mile track, being, you know, the half mile does have its post disadvantages and so on and so forth. But over the last few years, Yonkers has become a much more fair playing field, especially since they got rid of the passing lane. Probably, oh, is that 2018 or 2019? It's within the last 5 or 6 years, I think. It might even be more recent. Was it 2020 they got rid of it?
I want to say 20.
You think it's 20 years or 2020? Because it's
2020.
Oh, okay. It might have been 2020. Like I said, once the pandemic started, my concept of
2018.
It was 2018. See, I told you. So yeah, it's been about 4 years since they got rid of the passing lane, and so like I said, it's become a much more fair playing field across the whole gate. You have drivers being much more aggressive too from the outside of the gate. They've played around with where the races start to give horses a bit more of a lead up into the first turn. First elimination, Gulf Shores is kind of a tricky favorite because he does excel on the Ohio circuit. But when it comes to leaving Ohio, I mean, he proved himself as a 2-year-old. He was second in the Breeders' Crown. The one interesting thing about this race specifically is if you look at the breeding, which, I mean, you don't really look at breeding too much in handicapping, but it's interesting to see that of everyone in this elimination, Gulf Shores is the only one sired by a horse who at least had decent half-mile form. Captain Treacherous, the smallest he ever went was on a 5/8. Sweet Lou, he smallest he ever really excelled on was a 5/8. And I think back to when he won the Ben Franklin, that would have been, I think, 2014 or 2015. That was during his season where he went like 5 or 6 sub-48 miles in a row. And then the second elimination, Hammering Hank, is one that he also came out of the woodworks. Another example of Brett Pelling conditioning really helping develop a young horse into something much stronger than you'd think he would be based on where he's racing. Because typically you don't see horses that race out of the Kindergarten Series and the Stallion Series end up leaving those or using those as a springboard to go onto the Grand Circuit. And Hammering Hank's a prime example of one that just needed that conditioning in some of those weaker races. And now here he is coming into the Messenger. He can race on the lead. He can race from off the pace. That elimination really goes through him. It's going to be interesting, though, to see what Market Base does, because he's one that has speed but also might prefer racing on the smaller tracks. Ironically, he's also a Sweet Lou out of a Millionaire Mare in Economy Terror. But maybe Market Base is finally able to go gate to wire for once. Who knows what happens with that elimination? But there... it'll be interesting to see what kind of fields we get out of those. And on top of that, you know, that second elimination, if anything, I think could provide some kind of surprise. Who specifically? I'm not gonna say yet.
So then we have the trots, the younger trot elimination, yes. Races 8 and 10. And the joviality, a heavy favorite in the first one. As we mentioned, she is number, did I say 6 or 5? She is number 5 on this week's top 10 poll. So she is definitely taking some action. She'll be taking on the boys in the Yonkers Trot. We also have, was it the first one, second one, somewhere? Am I making things up? Didn't I? Oh, yeah, Brave by Design's in the first elimination. There we go, our Dexter Cup champion of this year. And in race 10, our favorite there will be Justice, who also came out of the Dexter Cup. In fact, the second place finisher there. Mm-hmm. So what you got for me on the trots?
Joviality, we've always known to be a talented filly. She won the Breeders' Crown from post 10. She was put into the race, got a great trip, just nosed raised by Lindy there at the finish over that sloppy track. She has every right to beat the boys in this spot. The one thing I will say, though, is we should never forget how Vernon works as a track. Vernon is a much faster track than anyone ever remembers. So you see a 51 mile from a horse at Vernon. Sure, she's a 3-year-old filly, and no matter what, 51 mile from a 3-year-old this early in the season is worth taking note of. But Vernon does carry speed better than other racetracks. Let's say, for example, like a Hoosier, which tends to be a bit of a deeper surface that has kind of sped up over the last few years, and is one that, you know, it takes a specific kind of horse to kind of get over it with the most speed. No one cares about those semantics, especially when they're betting, even though that's what matters. But aside from joviality, Dover in Motion's coming in. Dover in Motion, we got to remember, was undefeated before going into the Mohawk Million and raced fairly well to finish sixth there behind Venerable and Duly Resolved in that race. I don't know how he's going to handle the half mile track. I think he's as capable as some of the other ones on the Grand Circuit. I'm happy to see him show up. It's just tough to tell how a horse that excels so much on the bigger track will try and handle something with a bit tighter turns. That's the first elimination specifically. You have a bunch of other horses coming out of mainly Sire Stakes company. Like Kosher Mahoney, Pour Me a Double. There's tons of value to be had from a lot of these unproven horses in that first elimination. The second elimination, Robertson's the most interesting to me because Robertson's one we watched on the first mile last year. He's stabled at Magical Acres. And this was a Nick Drennan horse that showed nothing but speed in his baby races, was absolutely a freak on the lead, and then showed that through most of his 2-year-old campaign, but he was just too green to handle all of that speed. You know, and the Peter Houghton he was put on the front, he was super sweaty in that race and then faltered to finish sixth, and King of the North flew from off the pace, off of a fast pace, I should also mention. So now he gets an inside draw and is coming in off a decent win from post 8 at Yonkers. Robertson's a real interesting one going into that second elimination. Justice, sure, he was second in the Dexter Cup, but I feel like he's going to be a bit overbet, especially off of what's more of an okay race in the Empire Breeders' Classic. Did beat Branded by Lindy, who's a decent horse for Domenico Cecere and the Antonacci's. But all that's it. In terms of the eliminations, I think the trots have a lot more interesting things going on with them than the messengers, but that's not to talk down on the messengers. These are some decent eliminations for being short fields.
Well, that is some good outside of the Saturday Mohawk Woodbine card. A lot of discussion there from us on lots of random topics, but we will now turn our attention to this Saturday's action at Woodbine Mohawk. We have a 10-race program, a 7 p.m. first post time, www.woodbine.com/Mohawk/free-program for your free program as always. Ray, we've got early pick 5 action to talk about. We got later races to discuss as well, so we will jump right into it, and we will turn our programs first to race 8. Race 8 is not winners of 2000 in their last 3 starts. An interesting condition written there. It's for the Pacers for a purse of 10,000, and we have a favorite in here in the form of the 2, Nickelbag, who takes a drop down in class, the 12-year-old with Jody Jameson, and I think it's tough to get around this favorite. I have to go with Nickelbag on top. He obviously scratched last time you and I were on to discuss the racing. That was that vet's 6th scratch back on April, or rather it was the injured scratch back on May 14th. But here, I think this is the spot. Nickelbag, definitely the one to beat in race 8.
I haven't even looked at this race, but I can tell you right now, I would not bet Nickelbag with your money, and there is plenty of your money I could waste on this horse. I could even probably buy Nickelbag if I wanted to. I could buy a Nickelbag. I could buy many Nickelbags if I wanted to. But I'm not going to, because I don't... Why... Ed does this just to hurt me. He wants. I was born with only four ventricles in my heart, and he just wants to knock each one out one by one by one until there's nothing left to pump, and then I drop and die. Is that what you want, Ed? I don't want that. I'd rather the nickel bags do that to me. At least I get to have a fun time at that point. Jeez.
Early pick five action, race one.
I also can't believe you're not mentioning the fact that last time I was on this show, I gave out a winning pick five. You glanced over that detail entirely. That is important information for everyone out there to know. Aside from, you know, I'm the most frequent guest on this show. Forget Robert Reed, even if he was on one more than me. Come on, Ed. You know that I've been on way more than him. You probably lost an episode of Iz or two. It just happens. Oh, I'm getting a spam call. Hold on.
Hello?
We're watching you take spam. Okay, we are.
Okay, that was the first time I got a car warranty call in Spanish. That's cool. I didn't realize my car was so worldly. You know, it hasn't traveled outside of my... Actually, it has traveled outside of my state, but not outside of this country. I'm going to have a conversation with them a bit later. But
race one, 20 cents. Pick five wagering, $100,000 guarantee pool. You know, it's a sequence that I think we both thought was very formful, honestly. You know, both cheap tickets. You spend $240, I spend $360. So maybe not a sequence you want to heavily invest in. Maybe just kind of pick up a little piece and move on to later races to invest some more money, such as Nickelbag in the eighth. But race one here, it's fillies and mares, non-winners, $11,500 in their last five starts. Pacers for a purse of $20,000. And you will kick it off using two of them.
Yeah, formful is the diplomatic way to put it.
Once again, Ed has me on for a week where I can't give out a $10,000 pick five and then have everyone start tweeting at me how much they love me and cherish me and hope that I never pass away. But unfortunately, after this, I'm probably going to get all of the exact opposite. I was down to three horses. Of course, I take two. I think the center three are the ones this race goes through, but I don't want to have Dream Dancing on with other horses since she is the morning line favorite, and that kills any kind of value on this ticket. So I'll try her stablemate to the inside. I'm Short and Sweet, who two starts back was absolutely loaded against Tougher and just could not get away through. The moment that she did straighten, she had horses in front of her, so she couldn't really charge home to the full extent that she was capable. You see a 27-second final quarter on there, she could have easily gone 26-4. That's a whole length, and she only lost by a length and three quarters. So that means she could have become a millionaire. But then she was put into a bit of a tough spot last time out from that pylon post, aggressively sent towards the lead into the half, and it doesn't really seem like that's kind of her way to go. At least on that night it wasn't, because that track was much slower than usual. Forgive that race. She drops in class. I see her being much more value than her stablemate and having a ton more upside off of those last few starts. Otherwise, Control the Thong has shown a ton of upside since being claimed by Carmen Osiello. Went gate to wire, or coast to coast, I should say. I don't know if they have a wire at Mohawk. Went coast to coast against 15,000 optional claimers, so I believe that's the non-winners of 5,000 level? Maybe the non-winners of 3,000, I don't remember off the top of my head. And then racing that wonderful, mysterious condition class that no one is meant to know what it's supposed to be. And she won that in 50-4 as the 3-2 favorite. Whether she can keep up those kinds of miles or not, I don't know. I think it's interesting she took last week off of a mile like that. So she's either rolling in on some strong form, or maybe she bounces a touch this week. It's tough to say. So I'm 4-6.
I will go 1-4-5 here. I will use the other Moreau horse you discussed there, the 5 Dream Dancing. The one Mary Cat, big class drop here. The other one I will take a look at here. Good inside post draw as well. She's shown speed last time out. Was Sway 7th to start before that. But if she wants to show speed from the rail tonight, I think she'll have the chance. So I will go 1-4-5. You will go 4-6. And race 2, 5-year-olds and youngers, non-winners of 5 races or 50,000 lifetime. Pacers for the purse of 21,000. And, we both single the two greatest ending, and probably not much more needed said than that, but I'll let you talk a little bit, Ray.
Yeah, so this is one that Doc Moore, I think, was pointing towards the North America Cup until he had some kind of boo-boo go on, which you gotta feel for Doc Moore. His horses keep getting these little boo-boos, but thankfully his first name is Doc, so he's taking care of them, and he's getting them ready to go, because once they start coming back, they start coming back. And at the very least, he's coming in off of a decent qualifier. Paced the back half there in 55-1, going 52-2 off of that sixth scratch from the Sun Beach somewhere. And this is a field that otherwise is full of horses that have broken my heart and have shown me that I should not love them. Which you have to be appreciative that they can show that to you. and not just like keep kind of playing you along and running you along until they drain all of the money out of your pockets, and then you're left in a cornfield. Like, Joel Z. Hanover was supposed to win last week, even though my pick five got knocked out by the other bane of my existence, the Greek Freak. I can't take Joel Z. Hanover in this kind of spot. That was a make it or break it moment, and he sure did break it. No better Joy's in here on the optional claiming tag. He's coming off of an okay qualifier, but how heavily he dropped anchor in that most recent start leaves me with so many questions. I don't know if Twinbee Heartthrob knows how to get to the finish line first. He's done it four times, but even though he's done it, I still don't know if he understands that he did it. That leaves like Chucky Hanover, who was okay in the spring series, but he's a three-year-old, and then he was, I don't know what he's capable of in Sports Secrets the same way. So I think Greatest Ending from the Inside just tries to go to the lead, and then it takes him wire to wire. It's just that's I'm not going to get creative with it. I'm not going to get cutesy with it. I'm just going to move on. Can I do that, Ed? Am I allowed to do that?
I think so. Okay. I'm doing that as well. So I will also single the two Great Ascending. Not much more needs to be said for me there. You know, looking for, let's see, four wins in a row here. Or, sorry, three wins in a row, five in a row. Do qualifiers count? Let's count qualifiers. Let's call it five in a row. We flipped the race three.
Yes.
Not winners of 20,000 in their last five starts. Not winners of 30,000 in their last 10. Pacers for a purse of 26,000. And again, I just don't have a lot to say about these races, to be totally honest. It's six in the eight for me. I think it's either Wheels on Fire or American History. American History's big win last time out against non-winners, 29,000. Obviously, we know the class Wheels on Fire has had. He's found some difficult times lately, considering the company he's been up against. But maybe this is where he gets his little wake-up call against the non-winners of 20,000. I'll go 6-8. Ray, I know you're singling.
Yeah, I thought about this one for a bit. For way too long, honestly, for a horse that's probably going to end up being 4-5. But Wheels on Fire has been racing his eyeballs out every week for the last few weeks, even though he was fifth in the Gold Cup, and even though he was fifth to Bulldog Hanover in that free-for-all. This horse has been racing a much higher standard than I ever thought he was capable, especially for a horse that I once called. I called this horse at the Meadowlands, Ed, 4 years ago, fun fact. He was one of the few horses from the one race I got to call there that has gone on to do bigger and better things. That was on June 1st. I believe that would have been 2018 at the Meadowlands. Anyone can look that up and they'll hear my voice, and then they'll hear that I caught the horse getting up just in the last moment, like a real professional. But outside of that, he's another one. He's probably just going to go to the lead and try and sit some kind of trip, or even try and set the pace. American History can only set the pace. That's the only thing he can do at this point. He used to be one that could take back and then maybe zip up at the last second. But at this point, he's almost becoming like an ideal jet in a way, where all you can really do with him to try and win is just go to the front and then go a stupidly fast mile and blow away what could be in hours of 5,000, hours of 10,000. I don't know where American History will either land or fall to. Who knows? But Wheels on Fire has much better form than American History. In my book, is much easier to trust. The only thing I wonder is if he's progressing, or if like a race that like that race in the Gold Cup, if that takes a lot out of him. I don't know. It to me, it's a bit risky to take a morning line favor of that with this kind of form coming into the race, but also it could be incredibly rewarding. Either way, he's 3-5 or 4-5, Ed. You single him or you go against him. That's how it works. I'm going to go with a single.
Race four, non-winners of 4,300 in their last five starts. Pacers for a purse of 14,000. So we both will use the 7. That'll be Sporty, and the 10, no free lunch. I'll take the one. He's Swift, taking a drop down in class here. And gosh, look at that. Post 9, post 9, post 10 in the last three. Has ended up on the lead from post 9 in the last two. So on the drop down, I think he is dangerous. But you take the 2 Reagan Blue Chip instead. So 1 7 10 for me, 2 7 10 for you.
Yeah, this is a race that looks like it has a lot of cheap speed. He's Swift. I would like better if he had a post more to the outside than this. It's really, it's hard to get off the gate from post 1. And he's Swift is one that prefers to be up close and push off. So I don't really know what he does if he really tries for that. Century Fury got over raced there in the high five payout race. And then Bayfield Beach is another one that has been showing a lot of speed, but he's also really struggled to finish ever since leaving Ron Burke's barn and coming up to Vic Putty's. I don't really know what's going on with him. Point being, I wanted horses that could finish the race or at the very least be close and possibly finish. Reagan Blue Chip fits the be close and possibly finish. He held the finish third behind Grand Poobah and Jolsey Hanover, two horses who are much better than anyone in this race. He was also aided by the stretch headwind there to hold on by a half length, but all that said, he's going to be out. He's going to be up close. Whatever trip he goes, he maybe finishes and, you know, does all the happy things, all the connections, get their smiley pictures. I really don't care. That'll be Sporty can finish the race. He's won back-to-back and now moves up the class ladder a bit more out of the numbers of 2,000 and the numbers of 3,000. Now he is in the non-winners of 4,000. So, honestly, the sky's the limit with this one. He's going to be another one that's going to be sitting off the speed and just trying to finish the race. What price he's going to be, I don't know. I think it'll be kind of funny, though, if he goes off a long price again or if his odds just keep getting higher and higher and higher and he keeps winning and winning and winning. No free lunch. His only question mark is how does he handle the 6 scratch? He's making his first start then since June 4th, and he's making a huge drop in glass from the numbers of 16,000 to the non-winners of 4. So he'll have an excuse if he doesn't show up, but he also, in theory, is supposed to win. So I'm 2 7 10. This is not my favorite race, but I definitely am against the speed.
How he handles the 6 scratch. So do horses sit on the gate and be like, gosh, I was a 6 scratch last time. I wonder what I'm supposed to do now.
Ed, do I have to go back and talk about the horsey not breathe well scenario? Do I have to explain how this works again? I don't want to do it, Ed. I don't want to explain it again.
Race 5 is 5-year-olds and youngers. Now winners of 3 races are 40,000 lifetime. Pacers for a purse of 19,000. And this might be a similar race, I guess, Ray, where it's either use the favorite or single the favorite or throw him. You will throw him. I will single him. St. Lad Sterling, a big winner last time out. I think he's going to beat this group again and close out this pick 5 with a single. But you will just use 2 others instead.
Yeah, he won pretty in hand last time as the even money favorite. Ed, why are you calling me on the phone right now? Hello? Oh, he wasn't there. Ed, I don't know if you know this. You just called me.
Who called you?
You did, and you weren't there. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
How am I? Okay. Oh, wait, he's calling back. Hello? Hello? I'm talking to you right now. How are you doing this? Ed, I know I have.
Are you going to discuss your 5th race picks?
Look, Ed, I know I hang out with you a lot, but you have to tell me if you're actually talking to me right now. I'm not just imagining what you're saying.
Race 5, what you got?
Race 5? Okay. Race 5, I have 2 horses. I have the 3 and the 6. I'm going against the horse that won as the favorite last time. Acapulco Sunburn, a lot of the Gallucci barn has been kind of off form a bit, but this one's coming in off of a decent race first time off a 6 scratch.
Did you hear how he breathed off of the 6 scratch in that race?
Oh, I'm sure it was smooth like a saxophone. That's how they. You ever ask a trainer how a horse, you want a horse to sound after a race? They'll tell you they want them to sound like a harsh jazz instrument out of the lungs, out of their windpipe, no less. But I imagine this horse can probably improve off of that race. He fits this level. He's performed well before, and he's also lightly raced. He did not race as a 2-year-old, so again, he can only go up from here. They say as there's also an equal distance downward. Knock 10 is also put into an interesting spot here. He's back into the non-winners of X Sub races, and also finally lands on at a post where he can utilize his speed a bit better. He had the inside draw in his last three, but again, that's not the easiest place to get off of. And so now he's put into a spot where he can have a bit more leeway in how he wants to race, maybe get a bit more momentum going and carry his speed a bit better. And he's coming in off a race where the track, again, was stupid slow for whatever reason. So I think there's a lot to like about Knock 10 in this spot. He's probably going to be put into play. And whether he finishes the race or not, I mean, that's for the horse to decide, not me. 3-6.
So to recap our very cheap investments here in this pick five sequence, I will go 1-4-5 with 2, with 6-8, with 1-7-10, with 4 for $3.60. Ray, I hope you enjoyed the disrespect there. I think that's the first time ever on the show that I've read my ticket before my guests.
Wait, is it? Is that disrespectful? I
don't know. I think it is the first time I've ever done that.
Yeah.
You go 4-6 with 2, with 6, with 2-7-10, with 3-6, a $2.40.
Ed, that is incorrect. That's not what my ticket is at all. My ticket is 4-6. With 2, with 6, with 2-7-10, with 3-6. You got to read the numbers right, buddy.
That's exactly what I said.
That is not what you said. You said 4-6, with 2, with 6, with 2-7-10, with 3-6. Those aren't my numbers. It's 4-6, with 2, with 6. You got to be more emphatic about it. You got to put more punctuation between it. How are they going to know I'm putting a forward slash and not a comma? These are things you have to think about when you're talking.
Well, Ray, I will be more emphatic about the featured race we get to discuss here next that I am very excited to talk about. It is race 8. It's non-winners of 2,000 in their last three starts. It's Pacers going for a purse of 10,000. And we have a dropping favorite in here, the 2 nickel bag, coming in off of a effort against non-winners 6,200 last time out. Last time we were on the show here, he was a injured scratch back on May the 14th, but I think tonight is finally the night he gets back to the winner's circle.
Is it? You think so?
So who did you like in this race, Ray?
Yeah, $10,000 feature race at a Mohawk. Wow.
You're actually looking up this race right now to actively find any horse to go against Nickelback, aren't you?
The papers you hear rattling right now are just me with a bunch of scratch paper mindlessly playing with it, because I don't know if you know this, Ed. My brain fires electricity nonstop down my muscular system. I cannot go without moving or else I will die. Scientists have called me a perpetual motion machine. Others have called me severely ill. I don't know which one to believe. This is the American medical system, after all, so they could just be trying to push pills onto me, which, depending on which ones, I may listen, but for the most part, I'm not going to. If those pills are at all included in this nickel bag, though, I don't want any part of it!
All right, feature race of the night, race 9.
Like how angry I got. You were scared. Did you hear that? Did you hear Edison? Ed, did you just pee your pants from how scared you got from that? Ed, everyone else heard that, right? You don't have to get so scared. I was acting.
Non winners of 16,800 in their last five starts. Pacers for a purse of 23,000. Field of 8, a scratch off of the early proof version of the program. Leaves us with 8, and the favorite in here is Century Heineken, Juravinsky, to a couple of non-winners of 16,000 events in the last couple here at Mohawk. Has a 6th, a 3rd, and a 2nd here at the level, but hasn't quite gotten it done yet here, including 2 times ago as the favorite. So I will go a different direction. I'll take Powertrain. With the class drop with the rail, I will take Powertrain as your 3-1 second choice on the board. Ray, which way do you go?
Oh, this is... You know, I wish Nickelbag was in this race, then I could just take him. This is a race where I don't know how to feel about anybody. Powertrain, he needed that start last time. He's making a big drop in class. Everything textbook is saying he's supposed to win here, but you know, so I'm supposed to throw an object in the air and then it's supposed to come back down to me. But then why, when I let go of my Red Robin balloon, does it just fly away? I got that balloon for my birthday, and it's going into the sky. It's flying up. It's going towards the sun, Ed. When you throw things up, it's not supposed to go towards the sun unless it's one of your rockets. Pirate Hanover is not reliable to me. He's making his first start as a four-year-old, and even as a three-year-old, he wasn't reliable. Century Heineken keeps getting close to winning, but not winning. Mappos Lion was so extended in that race and so flat to the boards that I don't want to take him from that spot. And I don't even know what a Legion Sealster is, so that doesn't leave me with much option in this race. Rock Me Roll Me is an interesting value horse, because he's always put into play, and he's always at least somewhere close. And with Austin Sori in the bike, people are saying, Sori, who's this kid? He was 69-1 in that race, and he finished third behind Second Bruiser, flying even better. I at the least know that Second Bruiser is an okay horse. He was at one point a contender for last year's North America Cup. But all of that said, this is like an island of misfit horses race for me. I am, whatever horse I land on, it is purely just a compromise to everything else in this race. It's very possible that the only other horse I did not mention, Island Special Major, blows them away, because I have nothing to say about him. I don't really know how to take it. Macho Phil's a three-year-old. He's not supposed to be here, but here he is, off of two victories. Maybe he wins again. I don't know. I also don't remember what the Ontario Sire Stakes calendar is. I don't even remember if Shanghai Phil is an Ontario Sire. These are all questions that you should know when you see a three-year-old come into a race like this. He is an Ontario Sire. He raced in the SBOA three starts ago. Thank you, me. You're welcome. Powertrain's going to be over bet. I say watch Rock Me Roll Me's odds. If he's 60-1 again, just bet Austin Sori. That horse is going to be somewhat close. He might finish the race well, and if not, at least you have fun betting a 50-1 shot and not losing with a 3-5 shot like Powertrain's probably going to be. And that is that. Am I done? Can I go now, Ed? You never came over and paid me my 10 grand, by the way, and the show's just about over.
Well, so wait, so what's your, so Rock Me Roll Me, is that what you're going with?
I'm just gonna go with Rock Me Roll Me. I don't like anything else in this race. He's the only horse I look at and I go, okay.
And do I get a pick for you for race 8 or not?
Day Delight.
I'm just going to write you down for Nickelback.
All right. Well, you really are my doctor. Okay. I didn't think you could prescribe those.
Well, racing fans, that concludes a look at a bit just about of everything. Recapping North America Cup last week. Looking forward to tomorrow's Yonkers action. 6:55 post-time races. 7 through 10 are the two eliminations for the Pacers and the Trotters, and Ray Gattolo will be on the simulcast feed there, so you can check that out. Again, Saturday morning, 9 a.m., 17 qualifiers at the Meadowlands. Saturday night at Wood by Mohawk, 10 races at 7 p.m., and Monday morning, 10 a.m.,
yes,
to conclude breakfast, or to conclude the first mile for this year. Gateway Farm, 11 qualifiers to round out the baby season of June.
Oh, it just never ends, Ed, does it? It just keeps going and going and going and going. And we haven't even gotten to the Hambo yet. We haven't gotten to the Pace yet.
Pace yet, yeah.
What is happening?
Well, racing fans, we'll wish you the best luck this weekend with all your wagers, whether you're wagering by Mohawk, the Meadowlands, I don't know, Gateway Farm. Can you wager Gateway Farms or Magic Lakers, right?
I'm sure with the people in the bleachers, they'll book a bet or two with you.
If you're betting on the baby races, whatever you're betting on this weekend. Sports, whatever we got. Ray, we didn't discuss any sports here. You've got 30 seconds. Give us a sports thing for the weekend. What do we got in sports ball?
Well, unfortunately, there's no one left for the Golden State Warriors to play, so I'm hearing that they're going to play themselves. And honestly, I don't know who's going to come out on top of that.
Oh, gosh. I'm not even sure if he's... You know, Ray knows that I gave him one really good golf tip a while back, and he still has never thanked me for it properly. So the answer is Colin Morikawa. So I don't know if he's in this week, Ray, the Travelers. I don't think he is, but if he is, you might want to go that route.
Why are the golfers in a car insurance company? What, are they going to race in the Safe Auto next? Are they going to race in the Progressive Cup?
He's not in the Travelers this week. So
are they going to race in the State Farm 500? The bum, 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 bum? That's fun.
All right, racing fans, good luck this weekend. Wherever you're wagering, we hope all your bets are winning ones, and we'll talk to you next week with maybe a more competent guest.
Wait,
maybe
why is it State Farm and then Farmers is another company?
And we'll talk to you next week. First over with Edison Hat.
Ed, you stole me $10,000.